Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. So what do InvestTalk insiders know that maybe others don't? They have access to the answers, investment resources that come straight from the desks of professional investors, special watch lists created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider. The webinar archive provides access to various lessons about how to invest properly. Just click on the InvestTalk tab to sign up. It's free on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. And Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. We're all about above-average investing for the average investor, as you know. Everyone is looking for opportunities in all aspects of life, aren't we? And searching for good investments is no different. The problem most investors have is that they have a narrow view, putting their assets to work, hoping the value rises. But in fact, assets also fall. And when they fall, there could be opportunities. Now, as you know, there's three things you can do with assets. You can buy them, you can sell them, or you can hold them. And buying gives you the potential to earn a return on your money, but it also exposes you to risk of losing that money. Selling allows you to take risk off the table. Selling also gives you fresh powder to potentially invest in new opportunities. But it also eliminates any potential gain from the assets you sold. This is not rocket science. Holding allows you to reap cash flows and profits over time, which usually provides some type of return if you purchase the asset at a reasonable price. That's a key. You gotta buy right. But also when you own it and hold it, it ties up that precious capital that you worked so hard to get. And maybe you could use that capital for something better if you just hold on to something else. But you have more opportunities. You can't invest because you hold it. It's always the same. Always. By the way, that's called, in economic terms, called opportunity cost. When you lose, you don't have the money or assets to buy something because you're already invested. It's opportunity cost. At different times in any market, all three options can be valid: buying, holding, selling. And depending on your time horizon and your risk tolerance, would you buy, hold, or sell? It is your job to identify the opportunities in the marketplace, and sometimes that involves simply holding tight with your current positions. In other situations, it means you need to buy more, deploy fresh cash. And then at others, means that you need to liquidate assets, hold on to cash. And going to cash and holding that cash can be a form of opportunity, even though many people never view it that way. Usually when the masses believe buying an asset is an opportunity, but the odds are good that that true opportunity is to sell. You don't want to follow the herd. You don't want to follow the herd over the cliff. You don't want to just be a follower. You want to be an independent thinker. That may mean you are going with the herd. But you want to be an independent thinker. You don't want to be part of the masses. Try to be nimble. Try to look for opportunities. Not just buying things. It's not just about that. Okay, I'll stop my preacher. I'll get off my soapbox here. Do you have questions about finding opportunities? When to sell, when to buy, when to hold on? You can reach me right now at 24-hour listener line. It's always on 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime. Renee in San Diego. How are you doing, Renee?
Great. I was actually calling to find out information, opinion about the style of investing. Large cap of value versus large cap growth or blended?
Depends on the blend, obviously. Many times when you hear the word or see the word blended in a mutual fund, it means that they put some bonds in there.
Okay, because I was actually looking in particular to an exchange trade fund, VTV, Vanguard Value, or Vanguard Large Cap Growth, VUG.
Okay. Over any length of history, just so you'll know, Renee, value trumps growth, okay? Mm-hmm. But there are periods, And by the way, value has been trumping growth since 2000.
Yeah.
Value stocks. But it seems to me that it's time to think about migrating a little bit to the growth side. Why do I say that? Because I think the tech stocks are going to move. It seems like the tech stocks might have the potential to move, and they are considered growth stocks.
Oh, I see.
But I don't think, Renee, that means just avoid value altogether. No, no, no. I'm just saying maybe start increasing your large cap growth position, but still hold on to some value.
I have about 10,000. I was wondering, do I invest in maybe about three companies that are good value, look really solid, or do I go in an exchange-traded fund that has a little more diversification?
With $10,000, I'd probably go with a diversification in ETFs.
Okay.
And remember, you can get a sector, you could do a whole market, you could do a growth versus value, or you could do tech, you could do oil, you could do oil services, you could do foreign with ETFs. And what's nice about ETFs is you do get that instant diversification. So I would not hesitate to have maybe, I don't know, four, five, six ETFs with $10,000.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. It's spread it out. Spread it all out. And say, okay, and what you do is you're doing the right thing, Renee. You decide, should I be in the value growth side? Large, small, mid? How about foreign? How about a sector? What would be a good sector to be in right now? Those are the kind of thought processes you go through.
And from the articles I've read, they're saying that the small caps have had their heyday. Now the large cap seems to have its turn in the...
Yeah, I'd probably stick with the mid to large caps, I would.
Okay, perfect.
Renee, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Let's also try to answer questions sent in through text format, which is becoming more popular. Hi, Michael from South Florida. I've enjoyed your show on podcast for a year now and learned a lot. You have shared the metrics of how to choose a stock, but I'm limited in my 457 to mutual funds. And 457 is remember, there's a 401k, 403b, 457, I think it's for public employees. So what metrics would you use to choose a set of mutual funds? Which is also a very good question. And when you buy mutual funds, you start to compare peer group performance. So the peer group of the fund that you're in, you're going to compare that with other exact same types of funds. You look at risk versus reward, and Morningstar.com is a good website to take a look at, and you can compare the funds that do the exact same thing and manager against manager and see how much risk. Do they take more risk or average risk, and what has there been the reward? Because, you know, when you start talking about mutual funds, they're not all in, you know, the S&P 500 funds. They might be growth stocks or value stocks, small cap, mid cap. They might be different kinds of classes. So you kind of have to compare them with each other. Okay, and that's the only thing you really can do. You start looking at the managers of those funds because you're relying on them. You're relying on the managers to do a good job. So you have to really look at the managers, look at the performance, look at what kind of risks they're taking to get that performance. Do they do what they say they do? There's many large cap funds that have small cap stocks in it, but they're supposed to be a large cap fund. Well, and then they might outperform or underperform because of those small caps. And then you get caught up with, oh, that was a great fund. Look how much it made. And compared to its peer group, it's made a lot more. But maybe it cheated by buying small cap stocks that grew very fast, and it was a good timing on their part. See, there's a lot to look at for a mutual fund. There is a lot. Now, over time, the risk level in your portfolio can increase or decrease without you even knowing it. The critical balancing act, and that's going to be one of our talking points today, our main talking point. Also, I have a chart of the countries with negative interest rates. And then it's a matrix of 1 year to 30 year bonds and which ones have negative interest rates with which countries. And I think you'd be surprised as the country that has the most negative yields on the most bonds. 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, all the way up to 30 years. I don't think you would guess which country that is. But I got a list of all the countries that have negative rates. I'm going to give you all of them. I think that would be interesting. Morgan Stanley says that they fear policymakers are making the exact same mistakes they made during the Great Depression. What are those mistakes? And older workers over 50, one out of two of them think they will be working when they're 70. But I don't think they're going to be able to work. There's some surveys out there we talk about. And I never did get to yesterday on net neutrality and what that means. And I hope to get to that too today before the end of the show.
Time for this market update for Thursday, July 7th. The Nasdaq finished a volatile session higher. A drop in oil prices moved both the Dow and the S&P 500 downward. Most think the markets are still adjusting to the shock of the Brexit. Government yields remained under pressure as investors continue to seek secure assets. Low yields are seen as a sign of worries about global growth. Here are the numbers. The Dow down 0.1% at 17,895. The S&P 500 down 0.1% at 2,097. And the Nasdaq up 0.4% at 4,876. This market update from KPP Financial. You're listening to an InvestTalk replay today, but you can still get your question to us, 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer it on the next InvestTalk.
We're glad you're with us today for InvestTalk. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by me, myself, and Justin. These reports, important topics: annuities, wills, trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, and we also have updated ETF lists. And we have more webinars. If you want to become a member, it's really, really simple. It doesn't cost anything. All you have to do is sign up. That's it. Go to investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Tim, San Diego. How you doing, Tim?
Hi, I'm doing well. I have a question on a 401k account. I've got a mutual fund that I've been investing in, and in 2004, they closed it to new investors.
Yes.
So I'm still able to contribute, and I do. However, I've heard that there could be some disadvantages to funds that are closed to new investors. Can you add any information to that?
I don't think there is disadvantages. If you forgive me, let me explain it to everybody else. Mutual funds are open-ended. All mutual funds are open-ended, and you can keep buying shares, but they do have the right to close it. That means that they say, we got too much money for what we do, or we don't want to get too much money for what we do. Maybe we buy small-cap stocks, and we're getting too big. Or too much money flooded in too fast. That happens, too. It's very responsible for the fund managers to close it. When I hear a fund manager closing a fund, I say good for them, because they have recognized they're not as greedy as they could be, Tim, right? I mean, what money manager doesn't want more and more and more money? They make a percentage, all the money they manage. So if they closed it, there's not too many downsides. Now, when a fund is closed, it's usually just closed for any new investors, but existing clients, existing investors can continue to add money if they want to. And that's the situation you find yourself. Now, yeah. Tim, the disadvantages of a closed fund. Well, the disadvantage is there's a reason why they closed the fund. The reason could be they have too much money to stay focused in the investments that they have. It's a good and bad thing. Well, the good thing is they recognize that they want to stay focused on what they can do, and that's by not taking more and more and more money in. The bad is they probably got too much money. So they might underperform.
This is a huge fund. It's called the Prime Cap Fund at Vanguard.
Oh, well, absolutely means very little in this situation, because they are so big, they are the market.
Oh.
They are so big, Tim, when they throw around a few billion dollars, that's pennies to them. So they're so big, they have to buy the big stocks, and pretty much whatever the stock market does, they do. It's almost like buying an index fund.
Okay. As a growth fund, it's okay. It's a good component to still having a 401k.
Sure. Plan. There's nothing wrong with it. I wouldn't pick it because of the size. I'm kind of a guy who likes to make sure the manager has flexibility. And because of the size, I wouldn't pick it. But your 401k, that might be one of the better ones in your 401k, because you don't get a lot of choices.
Great. Well, thanks for the information.
Thanks for calling. Thank you. You listen to Invest Talk. We would like to, if you would like a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks, give me a call. Send me an email. I'll send it to you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Chris in San Jose. How are you doing, Chris?
Just fine, Steve. I had a question for you regarding day trading. I did not want to get involved in day trading, but while trading and buying some stocks, I got some warning from my trading platform saying that potential day trade. And when I talked to my broker, they were saying something about if you have less than, I think it was $25,000, you couldn't trade more than 5 trades in 5 days or something. Does that sound right to you?
That's only because of your platform, your particular platform. Do you want to tell me who you're using?
I don't know if I would get in trouble for doing
that. Okay, yeah. No, don't tell me then. No, that's that particular platform. Let's say you're using Scottrade or you're using E-Trade. They have their own rules. You go to somebody else and there won't be any rules. You can go to somebody else that will have different rules. So, Chris, it's only that platform. They're trying to discourage you from day trading. That's why they're doing it.
Okay, yeah, because the way it was presented to me is if it was some sort of SEC rule, and I was wondering about that.
There isn't. That's wrong.
There isn't.
There is a 3-day clearing that they could wait 3 days, but even that's old thinking. They don't have to wait 3 days, but a lot of companies still do. In other words, when you do a day trade, you're buy and sell, you know, for them to click before you can use that money again, they got to wait 3 days. That used to be the old rule. That's not necessarily so anymore, but a lot of platforms say you got to wait 3 days. They're discouraging day trading because they think people can't, you know, there are too many people losing money. Yeah, it's
different. I'm not trying to day trade, but it just came out that way. You know, so at any rate, I just wanted to find out basically what the real deal was.
It's just their particular rules. SEC has guidelines for everybody, okay? And you can interpret those guidelines differently. And one of those things is you're supposed to know your customer. That's one of the guidelines. You're supposed to make sure you reduce the amount of risk, give the client the best fill on their prices. There's all these guidelines. And so the companies are left with, well, I have to set up rules to fall within these guidelines. And the SEC doesn't tell you what rules, so you kind of have to make up your own rules, and then they come in and audit and say, I accept your rules. So they've just got, I think they just got strict, that's all. That particular
platform.
Okay,
well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the call. Shannon, Livermore. How you doing out there in Livermore, Shannon?
Doing great. I've just started kind of investing. I'm 36, and the company I work for, they don't have a 401k.
Oh, man, you need to get them on the ball.
I know, but I was thinking of doing it on my own. Okay. Interested in the Roth IRA.
Well, how old are you again, Shannon?
I'm 36.
Do the Roth. That's the one you want. Don't do regular. Do Roth IRA.
Okay. You said there's no tax on it?
That's right. You know, the money you're making every day, you know how you pay income tax on it?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you don't get to write that off. You still have to pay income tax on it, on a Roth IRA. But once you take that money and put it in a Roth, all the growth that you're growing that money, let's say you put in $5,000 this year, and that money grows over 20, 30 years, grows to $30,000. Just pick a number.
Okay.
When you start taking it out, you never have to pay taxes on any of that money you take off, ever.
Okay, and I have someone that I guess I should go through. I had bought some mutual funds, but they're the real low-risk ones.
Okay.
They're not really going to make any money.
No. They'll get out of the low-risk. Do high-risk, Shannon.
Okay.
Buy a mid-cap growth fund, a small-cap growth fund, a small value fund, and maybe a large-cap growth fund.
Okay. With the Roth, would I have to pay the $4,000 up front, or do I do it throughout the year?
You can put it in any time you want. Let's say the Roth money that you want to put in, is we're talking about the money you're going to put into the Roth?
Yes, sir.
You can put it in any time of the year. You actually have up until April 15th of the following year to put it in for this year, I believe.
Okay, but do I have to give them $4,000 up front?
Or? Nope. You can give $100, $200 a month. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, great. That's what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shannon. Appreciate the call. How about Chris in San Diego? How you doing, Chris?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, and I appreciate you calling.
The other day, I heard you talk to another gentleman with regards to a TSP monies and rolling it out when you're eligible to roll it out. And I'll be having to roll mine out in about 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. Would I roll that into an IRA?
Yes, you would.
Would it be a taxable IRA or a Roth IRA?
Nope, it'd be a non-taxable IRA. It won't be a Roth. It'd be a regular IRA. It depends on the money we're talking about. I'm assuming the TSP money we're talking about is retirement money that has not been taxed.
Correct.
Therefore, you will roll into a regular IRA.
I see.
But when you get closer, Chris, you want to talk to an accountant, talk to me again, because rules change.
Okay.
Because you're talking 3 years from now, it's that's still a ways to go.
Yeah, and I'm putting in about 10% into that.
Good for
that,
you.
So,
now, see, Chris, I want everybody to do that. That is more than most people would ever consider.
Well, listening to you guys, how could a person not?
Well, I appreciate that, Chris. If I can get just one person to do that, I'm happy. I can't get my own family to do that, so they won't do it.
You
Chris, how old are you?
A lot of common sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Switzerland has the most negative rates. They're 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, 6 year, all the way up to 20 year, all negative. Then Japan, they're 15 years negative, 1 year to the 15. Germany, Australia, Netherlands, Belgium, Finland, France, Sweden, Denmark, Ireland, Italy, and Spain all have negative rates. Every one of those. Spain only has negative rate in 1 year. Their one-year government debt bond, but they all have negative rates, every one of them. That is not going to stand, everybody. It can't. Where do you go for money answers? We hope you think of us. I do. I really do. Call anytime you want and record your question at 888-99-CHART or send a note to me directly. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. That's an email that I get.
We thank you for subscribing. KPP Financial Services serves clients all across the U.S. And if you'd like to have Steve review your retirement portfolio personally, you'll be ahead of the game. He makes time each month for our podcast subscribers on Skype or phone. The next scheduled date is July 20th. To set up a time, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, we're going to go talk to Sean in San Francisco. How are you doing, Sean?
Not bad. Yourself, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Good. Hey, I had a question for you. Currently with a mutual fund, just strictly non-pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
I have with Fidelity. I am looking at long-term, but there's one fund I'm looking at, but it has pharmaceuticals in it. Is this a good long-term investment or, I mean, with it being dropping 15% and possibility of Hillary getting into office, I mean, do I stay away from pharmaceuticals or save the crime back in that ring, I'm asking?
I don't think you necessarily have to stay away from some pharmaceuticals, but I do. I'm a little hesitant about buying a mutual fund of pharmaceuticals because they'll have good ones and bad ones. And I think...
Yeah, it's a mixture of... go ahead.
Yeah. So...
It's a mixture of everything in it, but it has pharmaceuticals in it. So
I see.
I'm just trying
I wouldn't necessarily stay away from it because remember, when something does poorly for any length of time, usually as a group, they'll eventually recover. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are situations and times when they don't, but I don't think you need to be completely away from pharmaceuticals. I don't. Even with Hillary, if she gets in as president, I don't think it's going to necessarily be detrimental to them. You know, they'll still push more and more and more of the healthcare law to be, you know, like Medicare, but think about Medicare and pharmaceuticals. We've had Medicare for a long time, and pharmaceuticals have done well. So, So I don't think it will destroy them. It might put a little pressure on them, but some of them are going to look really good. I kind of like certain parts of the pharmaceutical industry. I really do.
Okay.
So I don't think you should be frightened of them.
We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Morgan Stanley says that they fear policymakers are making the same mistake that prolonged the Great Depression. If you probably don't remember, because, you know, who remembers that stuff? But after the initial crash in the both in the stock market and the economy in 1930, the economy started to pick up around 1938, and then it crashed again. And one of the reasons is because of what happened, what they were trying to tighten the reins, you know, and the Fed started to move in and tighten it. They don't do it. They didn't do it the same way they do it now, okay? But it still was a tightening of the money supply, and it threw us right back into a recession, okay, in 1938. So here, fast forward to 2008, and both 1930s, early 1930s, late 1929, we have the same financial shock into the system. Now, the reasons were different and all that, but it was a financial shock. Banks had, remember the bank holidays, and a lot of banks went out of business. Remember that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, that Christmas movie where they were trying to keep the bank doors open because everybody had a run on the bank, wanted their cash? Well, there was a financial shock. Okay, what did that do? Well, that kind of, you know, what happened is everybody that was in debt was trying to get out of debt for years and years afterwards. Isn't that the same thing that we're trying to do here, private companies and individuals? Did we have that financial shock? We had huge debt. Okay, and so everybody was trying to repair their balance sheets. Investors are hoarding cash now. We're at a 15-year high in the amount of cash held out of the market. And of course, we're doing the same thing with our monetary policy. Make things cheap, 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 cheap. And now that's distorted. You know, look, I've just talked about the negative interest rates. That's distorted the free market system. And what did that produce? It didn't produce a lot of growth in the economy. All these European countries have these negative growth, negative interest rates. How are they doing? They're not doing very well. Monetary policy, about the money, is not working. We need some fiscal policy to do its part, and that's not happening. Fiscal party, meaning the government, needs to do something. Or, you know, I'm not even talking about what they should do. I'm talking about they should do something. You know, they could lower tax rates. Or they could spend more money on, you know, infrastructure. Or they need to do something. They've done nothing for years now. Nothing. Anyways.
Time for this market update for Thursday, July 7th. The Nasdaq finished a volatile session higher. A drop in oil prices moved both the Dow and the S&P 500 downward. Most think the markets are still adjusting to the shock of the Brexit. Government yields remained under pressure as investors continue to seek secure assets. Low yields are seen as a sign of worries about global growth. Here are the numbers. The Dow down 0.1% at 17,895. The S&P 500 down 0.1% at 2,097. And the Nasdaq up 0.4% at 4,876. This market update from KPP Financial. You're listening to an InvestTalk replay today, but you can still get your question to us, 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer it on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Lisa in San Francisco. How are you doing, Lisa?
Very well, thank you.
What can I do for you?
I am calling because at the moment, my husband and I have a mutual fund, and all of our investments are in the stock market.
Okay.
And we want to go into a safer mode.
Okay.
And we're looking into another mutual fund that has bonds. However, my concern, it will be more a bond fund. My concern is what is going on in the market, saying that the government is not solid enough, and so my concern is those bonds and the treasuries. It's usually most of it, what we're looking at is into treasuries.
Okay.
Am I moving my money? Are bonds risky? I mean, corporate bonds could be, because it depends on the corporation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about U.S. bonds.
Okay. That's a good question, Lisa. The bonds itself, the U.S. Treasury bonds themselves are not risky. but a bond fund is risky. Yeah. When you buy a bond directly from the U.S. government, you get the bond, you hold it to maturity, so you get your interest and you get your money back, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a bond fund, they buy all kinds of bonds in there, okay? Mm-hmm. And they have different maturity dates because they buy some today and then they buy some tomorrow, next week, the week, on and on and on. So what happens in a bond fund, they have bonds maturing all the time and they reinvest the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if interest rates right now are 4%, you're going to get 4% about a yield on your bond fund. But if interest rates go up to, let's say, 8%, the old bonds are paying 4% go down in value, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you can buy a new one for 8. Those old ones, I'm not going to buy those unless you give me a big discount on them to give me an ultimate 8% return because they're so cheap. So what happened is the bond fund value, the net asset value, you know, what the bond fund is worth, goes down when interest rates go up, even though you still get the yield, you get the payment of the dividend, okay? So if interest rates start to rise over next week, next month, next year, 2 years, 3 years, the value of your bond fund, therefore, and will go down. Therefore, the money you put in will go less, get less and less and less. But you'll still get your dividend yield.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Very good question. Okay, 888-99-CHART is our number. We're going to go to Art in Milipitas.
Hey, I was listening to you about the best time to invest for the time of the year.
Yes.
I got a retirement, but I got about $20,000 in a reserve, just money market.
Okay.
To invest that now, I'm pretty flexible about taking the risk in a straight dividend fund.
Okay.
Would it be conservative or into a moderate allocation fund?
I would do it in a moderate allocation. You're retired?
Right.
You don't want to take a lot of risk on this stock, with this money.
I got two moderate allocation funds that
are
five-star funds, but I tended to sway toward the dividends because they pay you monthly income.
Oh, yeah. I love those dividends, Art.
That's what I really enjoyed about listening to your expertise in reference to dividends.
People, dividends make up a large part of the return on a portfolio. Don't ignore them. Don't ignore the dividends. But Art, what do you want to do with this 20 grand?
Well, the question being, Steve, moderate allocation doesn't give me a monthly dividend check.
No.
I kind of like the idea on a tax basis in a taxable account, this reserve $20,000 I have. Mm-hmm. If I take it in a dividend fund and it pays out monthly, I'm at a reduced tax rate on the income that I have coming out.
You know, Art, all I can suggest is just get it invested.
Exactly. If I had an emergency, if I needed anything, I got about 75 grand in taxable accounts.
Oh, so
if I needed an emergency, I could get out at any time.
Yeah,
I'm not restricted on staying in.
I definitely put that money to work.
I enjoy your expertise, Steve. You do a
great
job.
Art, I appreciate your calls. You guys make the show. I just enjoy it. That's all.
I think you do outstanding.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
We know you have questions. Maybe some of you haven't thought of them yet. Are steel stocks a good buy in 2016? Steel. Why would you not buy them? Why don't you buy them? How can you invest in equity crowdfunding? Should you do that? How do you do that? I try to stay ahead of it for you. I really try to keep myself informed. But if we missed one that's been on your mind, don't forget you can ask. You can ask anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we'll play it on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
If you have a question on our talking point today, the Critical Balancing Act, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage. Or you can send a note. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you. Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about treating your home as a retirement asset.
For most people, their home is a very significant part of their assets and maybe even their retirement assets.
We've talked a lot about this in the past, Justin, and you know what a lot of people forget about is the opportunity cost, right? So a lot of people that have owned properties for a long time have way more house than they really need. And so what I'm finding is a lot of times they have all that equity tied up in their property when they really need maybe a quarter or half of the house that they have. And they're forgetting about the opportunity cost of that money that's kind of locked in their property, right? So as you know, a house can be an asset, but it also can be a liability. So if, say, you have $1 million house when you only need a $500,000 house, if you can take $500,000 out by selling it and downsizing it, a lot of times you're going to make a lot better return with that $500 than just having it locked in your property.
Yeah, right? And you're paying property tax on that larger property, more upkeep on a regular basis, right, with utilities, et cetera. So it is smart, and we've helped clients with that as well.
We just recently helped somebody in Central California
exactly
to downsize, and that's going to be a huge benefit. I mean, if you're looking at coastal properties in a lot of areas of California, the cap rate as a pure investment is 3 or 4%.
Yeah, not very good at all.
It's not good. You can get them a lot better return than that. So
it just makes sense that you downsize, take that equity out of your home, own a place that is more tailored to your needs in retirement, mm-hmm. right? And take that equity out and earn a good, decent return on that, hopefully in a conservative manner, but you can earn a decent return, and that suddenly becomes a home that is, or a piece of asset that somebody has that now is dual purpose, right? It can produce income and produce a place for you to live. So it's a lot more bang for the buck in that manner.
Exactly. You want to turn your home into an asset. What's interesting is we've had a lot of clients buying coastal properties that ideally don't have HOAs, and our clients that are traveling a lot, they'll actually make it a vacation rental when they're not staying there. And they're getting their trips paid for, or even better. So it can be an asset, can be a liability. Most of the time, it's better for someone to downsize, buy a smaller property, and keep them separate. But some people have kind of a hybrid investment / home to live in as well, and we can discuss that option with clients as well.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Older workers over 50. One in two of them think they will be working when they are 70. One out of every two. 50%. Older workers who are over 50 think they'll be working, 50% of those will think they'll be working when they're 70. The problem is that these workers may not be able to have a job at that. 47% say they are in good health. That means 53% are not in good health. How are they going to keep working until they're 70 if they're not in good health at age 50? How? 40% feel stuck in their job, so they're not happy. 40% of them are not happy in their job. So they have poor health and they're not happy. And then almost 48% earn below $35,000 a year. So I think it's unrealistic to think that you're going to be working until you're 70 if you're one of these groups. If you're not in good health, you got to have good health to keep working. Or, if you don't like your job, you don't... Do you think your employer is going to want you? Now, I know there's not supposed to be age discrimination, but I think there is. Might be subtle, but I think there is. So that's going to be tough. The appeals court recently upheld that net neutrality needs to continue. Net neutrality. That means, what does that mean? That means that the rules have to stay in place that treat the internet like a public utility. And if you own or run, a telephone company, a cable company, you can't prohibit or block or treat any other web providers any differently. Everybody has to be treated equally. And that's been upheld. So I'll stay there. You're listening to InvestTalk, everybody. I appreciate it. Moving into the last segment of our show. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Judy in Redwood City. How you doing, Judy?
Fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question to ask. Is now a good time to buy dividend appreciation ETF like Vanguard or Schwab?
Okay. Buying a dividend appreciating dividend exchange traded fund. I think you're going to have a correction in the market. So, Judy, I would probably wait to see if we get that correction, and we'll get it probably sometime in the summer up until maybe October. So I wouldn't be in a rush to put money to work yet, but, you know, it's hard. If you're a long-term buyer, you pretty much can buy that fund almost any time, and over long-term, it will work. But I just think we are in for some softness in the market with the presidential election coming in, the Britain voting on leaving the EU. And, you know, we have a world economy that the International Monetary Fund downgraded growth. There's just not a lot of positives that makes me feel it's time to jump in the market. I'd be careful. But I do like that fund a lot, Judy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's get back to our 24-hour anytime listener line. We will pick up a question, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I'm looking on the Yahoo Finance page, and it's showing for the industries. It shows the statistics for the most recent quarters, specifically the silver commodity, and it's showing all the collective of all the companies that they track, the net profit margin at -60%+, and yet the price to earnings is zero. If you could please explain that, thank you.
Well, if you're not making any money, how can you have a price or earnings ratio? Because there's no earnings. Remember, so if they're saying that they have negative earnings on these companies, well, there would be no earnings. Therefore, there's no price earnings ratio, because that is based on the stock price divided by the earnings of the company. No earnings? No, you can't. Sixth grade math? No PE with no E. There's no PE ratio. That's what they're talking about. So gold, silver, you know, even some oil companies, a lot of commodity companies didn't make any money when oil and all the many of the commodities fell like a stone. Don't make any money. And therein lies some opportunity, right? Because that means the stocks got crashed. And now, you know, you've seen what gold has done this year, but for the last 2-3 years, it got crushed. This year is doing great because the price of gold went up. So you have to kind of take everything. You know how I like to buy companies that make money, but every once in a while, I'll take a shot at companies that don't make money. I mean, but you always take that risk, you know, with a reasonable amount of your assets. Okay, so when I look at our gold company, mining companies that we own, everyone is making money. Everyone makes money, has made money, and is making money. Okay, but very little money. But I like the growth prospects that we're looking at going forward. Yeah, so it seemed like a good opportunity. So that's what you're looking at. Let's go talk to Joe in Fremont. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fine, Steve.
Thanks for calling.
I just received a letter from my mutual fund saying that they want to convert to a closed-end fund, and I was wondering what you thought about that.
Actually, that's not a bad thing. So what they're doing is they want to limit the number of shares they're issuing out there. They want to limit. They don't want to have unlimited. Now, what's going to happen when they do that, Joe, is that your mutual fund, instead of selling at the net asset value of the exact value of the holdings that's inside the fund, now can sell at a premium or a discount to that net asset value.
Generally, don't they sell at a discount?
Not necessarily. Right now, many of them are, yes, right now. But in both phases, they sell at a premium. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's probably on balance more of a good thing because they're trying to limit the number of shares. One of the reasons they do that is they're gathering too much money to stay with what they're trying to do. So they're trying to limit the inflow of money. And that means that the manager of that fund is saying, you know what, I'm having trouble. Every day I get another $1 billion or $100 million, and I can't invest that much money that fast. You have to figure out why he's doing it, but that is probably the best answer that you could get, and probably the right answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's not bad. Joe, thanks. Appreciate the call. Time is up. Hope you found the time worthwhile. Appreciate it, everybody, for listening. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today, and let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.